Possible in part by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from The Great Impasta, a restaurant serving foods from northern Italy. The Great Impasta is at 114 West Church in Champaign. The staff at The Great Impasta encourage you to join them in supporting WILL AM 580.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.edu. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, some wonderful stories from storyteller and singer Dan Ketting. He is our guest this afternoon in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine, and we're going to get to that in just a moment. However, this is our fall fun drive. It's one of the times each year we come to you and ask you to support us with your financial resources, to make a pledge of financial support. $40 is our basic membership level. As a nonprofit public service radio station, we rely on our listeners. We rely on you for the largest share of our income. So that gift that you give us every year is really critical. 217-244-9455 is the number to call with a pledge of financial support. 244-9455. Our news director, AM 580 news director, Tom Rogers, is with me in the studio this afternoon. Thanks for coming in, Tom.
Thanks, Celeste. Good afternoon. You did mention that we rely on our listeners that much. Think of it not as much of just a giving of your effort as much as it is an investment. You do receive something for your investment, and that something is quality radio 365 days a year on AM 580. Think of it in those terms, and then make that call to 217-244-9455. Or if you're online, and there's a lot of online content that you can access at any time on our website. We have a special website this year to give your financial support to willpledge.org, W-I-L-L-P-L-E-D-G-E, all one word, willpledge.org. But make sure that your commitment, your investment gets to us so we can continue to provide you the quality radio you expect here on AM 580. 217-244-9455. Martha Deal and Pledge Central, we talk about the quality of programming that we bring, and we're about to begin another segment of the Afternoon Magazine where, you know, we think we offer something a little above and beyond what you may expect in a radio station.
Well, we certainly do, Tom. This afternoon, we have Mr. Ketting with us, and it will be a lively, entertaining hour. Public radio entertains, educates, enlightens, makes you smile, makes you cry. And this is one that's just going to hold us spellbound. We are going to be doing a giveaway drawing for some of the CDs with the stories that Mr. Ketting tells. So please call in 217-244-9455 for the drawing and a pledge.
Yeah. That's our story, is the story of providing a community service with the help of the community. You help us determine what AM 580 is like, and among those ways, the most predominant way that you help us determine that is by your financial commitment. 217-244-9455, and we'll give you back some good radio, and we'll also give you back a little something extra during this hour.
Okay, very good. 217-244-9455, and we'll have five winners this afternoon. Dan Ketting has donated a number of CDs, so we'll have five winners. Each winner will receive three of Dan's CDs. Call in this afternoon, and you'll be entered in the drawing to receive these CDs from our storyteller guest, Dan Ketting. And while a pledge is not required to be entered in the drawing, we hope you will consider making a financial contribution to WILL to support call-in programs like The Afternoon Magazine. Your support is so necessary. 217-244-9455. The basic membership, $40. Thanks. This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. Storyteller and singer Dan Ketting is with us this afternoon. Dan's an award-winning storyteller. He loves folk tales and fairy tales, myths and legends. He also loves to spin original stories for listeners young and old, here and abroad. He's the author of the book Stories of Hope and Spirit, Folk Tales from Eastern Europe. He also has recorded a number of CDs, including The Gypsy Wagon, Tales from the Neighborhood. Dan's work has won recognition from many organizations, including the National Storytelling Network, the American Library Association, and the Illinois Alliance for Arts Education. And I think this afternoon we may get him to tell a story or two. And at the same time, I hope you will join us with a story of your own. Questions and comments are also invited. Join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, if it would be a long-distance call, use our toll-free number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. You can find Dan on the web, by the way, at www.danketting.com. That's K-E-D-I-N-G. You can find more information there about Dan, as well as a story page where he posts a story he's written every few months. That's a great deal of fun. 333-9455, 800-222-9455. Welcome back. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
And thanks for your support of public radio.
Oh, well, thank you. It's always good to be here. On my travels just recently, I was passing through state after state and listening to the public radio stations. And it was great to be able to go from one state to the other and hear the different shows that each one offered, but also to hear some of the same shows so I didn't lose contact with the real world.
Well, that's good. You know, you travel all over. And I was wondering if you had a particular place that you really like to go, a particular venue that you really enjoy.
Well, every storyteller who's performed at the National Festival in Jonesboro, Tennessee, will tell you that's one of their favorite places. The audiences are really wonderful. The setting of this old city, which was the capital of the state of Franklin. Did you know that?
I found that out
when I went there the first time. There was an actual state of Franklin. It lasted for not quite a year, and then became absorbed into Tennessee. But it's a wonderful, beautiful little town. But also, I think when I'm over in England, I love being in England and Ireland. And again, the audiences are wonderful, and it's nice to be somewhere where just about every bend in the road brings you onto something old, something historical. Mm. You know, that's always been fun.
The art and the craft of storytelling alive and well?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Everywhere I go, it seems to be gaining more and more support. I just came back Sunday. I drove back from Selma, Alabama, for the Alabama Storytelling Festival, which was started by, here we go again, one of the commentators for NPR, and that is Catherine Tucker Windham, who Catherine was a reporter for many, many years in the Birmingham and Montgomery area, and still appears on Morning Edition usually. And you recognize her by her incredibly distinctive and beautiful Southern voice as she comes on. 87 years old and still performs. Though she told me that she's decided not to tour west of the Mississippi anymore. And I thought, well, Catherine, that's so wonderful.
That leaves you half the country, girl.
I know. And she is just the most wonderful performer. Just the most wonderful performer. She's just great.
Yeah. Well, tell us about a youngster that's coming up now.
Oh, youngsters. Well, there's several good storytellers. One of my favorites happens to be in England. And that's Amy Douglas. Amy's in her 20s, and she studied under people like Robin Williamson, the great tinker, storyteller and singer, and under Richard Walker, Mike Rust, people like that. And really, she was brought up by these storytellers. When she had interest in storytelling about 14 years old, they started to nurture her, and they would help her along and bring her to festivals and with her parents. And now she's just a wonderful teller, one of the finest. And she and I just authored a book that's coming out in a few months on English folktales.
Oh, got a title?
English folktales.
Yeah, English folktales.
Just had to keep this one real simple.
Okay. So we should really keep in touch with you on your website and find out.
Yes,
you know,
yes. And
when things
should
are
be
coming
out very
out.
Soon.
Yeah. So are people, it seems to me people everywhere are open to a good story. It seems to me that something essential about.
Well, they are. I don't know if you ever saw the movie Shadowlands with Anthony Hopkins and Deborah Winger. It's about C.S. Lewis.
Mm-mm.
It's a wonderful movie based on his life in his later years when he met and married Joy Gresham, who was an American poet, and how he came to understand what love really was. It's a wonderful movie. But there's a line in there where one of his students turns to him and says, "My father told me, we read to know we're not alone." But I really think that's what storytelling is all about. We tell stories and we listen so we know we're not alone, that other people have felt joy, felt grief, other people have laughed and cried. All the human emotions that are conveyed in a good story, when we hear it, we know that we're not the only ones, that there's been all these people before us who have experienced what we've experienced. Hmm. And I think that's what storytelling is all about.
Yeah. Do you recall as a child when you realized what a story is?
Oh, yes. My grandmother not only told me stories, but she taught them to me. She made me learn them, and I had to recite them for friends of hers sometimes. But I remember one time in particular when I really understood the power of storytelling was when I was a little bit older, and I asked her one time, I said, "Grandma, when I was a little boy, when I was 5 and 6 and 7, you used to tell me the most horrific horror tales. I mean, stories that were just, you know, I mean, Celeste, these are such horrible stories that only now am I starting to do one of them on stage, you know? I mean,
wow.
They're just the spookiest things ever." And I said to her, "Why did you tell me those stories?" And she looked at me and she said, "Well, when you were little, were you afraid of the dark?" I said, "No." "Were you afraid of ghosts and goblins?" I said, "Well, no, then nothing could be as bad as the things in your stories." And she said, "That's why. When you become familiar with something, you're not afraid of it." And she was trying to make me realize that the things that go bump in the night weren't there to be afraid of.
Yeah.
And that familiarity brought about a lack of fear.
Yeah. Well, you tell a little anecdote in Stories of Hope and Spirit about being in Chicago with your grandmother, helping her with the laundry
mm-hmm.
in the basement of a building that was pretty spooky.
Oh, yes.
And there was dripping water. And
oh, yes, she
is. She would tell you a scary story in the basement.
Oh, I hated when she did that in the basement. Because we had this old coal furnace that had been converted to oil, you know. And it looked like a gigantic octopus, something out of, you'd expect it out of Orson Welles' radio, you know. It's just horrible. "The War of the Worlds, come to my basement." And there was a coal bin, too, that was very dark and dreary. No windows, just the little door that opened up to let the coal in. And she would always do that, you know. And I was in a vulnerable position because I was up in a box turning the ringer of the washing machine because she didn't like the modern ones. She said she wasn't sure about those things. So I had to use the ringer to get the water out. And she'd sit there and tell me these stories. And then she'd say, "Did you feel that?" Oh, God, here we go again.
Ooh, I can feel the cobwebs, too, ooh. You know.
And she wouldn't let me kill spiders in the house.
No?
She said if you killed a spider, 10 or more would come to the funeral.
Hmm.
She said that they were good to have in the house. They ate other bugs, and she was convinced of that.
Yeah.
But
that was the story. We didn't have that colorful bit about the funeral, but we left spiders pretty much alone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
To this day, if I see a spider, I usually don't kill it. I'll try and take them and make them go outside, you know.
Show them the door. Now, tell us a little bit more about your grandmother, Rose. She grew up on an island off the coast of Yugoslavia.
Mm-hmm. Off the coast of Croatia. One of 12 children. And many of them went to different parts of the world to seek their fortune. And her mother, my great-grandmother, ran a coffee house, and she was also a seamstress. And she died at the age of 96. She was delivering some shirts that she had made, and she stumbled as she walked down the hill and fell down and broke her neck. So if you can imagine, at 96, still sewing and still delivering it to the people, and then stumbling and falling.
That's a good run.
It really is. Yeah. And then my great-grandfather was on a boat up and down the Danube in the when weather permitted, you know, and delivering goods. So a colorful family and a lot of stories. They had both learned stories from their families, and he had also learned stories on his adventures on the boat and brought them back to his family.
What kind of stories did your grandmother tell you about your great-grandfather?
Well, she told me mostly that it depended on her mood, what he was like, you know. Sometimes he was just this wonderful father, you know, who was so loving. But I also get the impression he wasn't around a lot because of his work. And so I think sometimes some of those stories might have been inflated a little bit in the eyes, in her eyes as a child, of a father who wasn't quite there all the time. But he still seemed to be a very loving man. And also someone who would come home and just start pouring out all the stories of his adventures on the boat and the stories he learned to his children, because he had so many.
Yeah.
They, in turn, told the stories in the coffee house
to
customers when they were waiting tables and things.
What's another interesting way of not being alone, both for your great-grandfather on the boat, away from his family, and then when he came home, in a sense he was telling his family, you've not been alone. I have these stories for you.
Exactly, exactly. He was able to leave part of himself behind when he would go in the form of those stories, and they would remember that.
Yeah. Did your parents encourage you when you're coming up as a storyteller?
Oh, gosh, no.
No?
Oh, my. Oh, my poor mother. She wanted me to be a doctor or a lawyer or a teacher or something respectable. And she was just, I think she did several novenas to St. Jude, who is the patron saint of the impossible, trying to get me to.
Lost causes.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I was, so it didn't work. Poor St. Jude, he kind of lost a lot of his luster there. But she really didn't come around until about halfway through my career.
Yeah.
And then it was like, oh, okay, he's not going to change. So we might as well embrace this.
Yeah. I wonder if storytelling skips a generation.
It did in my family.
Yeah, it did in your
family. My mother remembers very few stories from her mother. And I remember many, many more.
Yeah.
Again, she wasn't interested in learning them, but I was.
Did your grandmother defend you to your mother?
Oh, always.
Yeah.
Always. She was right there in the house. And if I did something wrong, she wouldn't defend me. But if there was a hint of injustice, my grandmother would step right in.
Yeah. Well, would you like to tell us a story, either a story you learned from her or a story from that part of the world or a story of your own?
We'll do, first of all, do a story about bread. And this is this really kind of shows you a little bit of what my grandma was like and what it's like to try and keep a tradition alive. A grandmother, we called her Noni. Actually, it should have been Nona, but I could never get Nona out when I was a little boy, so it came out Noni, and it stayed Noni. And all my cousins called her Noni after that. No one got it right after me. Well, grandma would always make bread, and she made it on Tuesday mornings. She got up very early and started her bread making. She always would leave a big lump of dough out for me, which she flattened and put in a black skillet and would fry it up with brown sugar and butter. And that was my lunch, was fried bread. And after a while, the kids in the neighborhood, especially in the summertime, started realizing, oh, boy, if we go over to Dan's house on Tuesday and play in the yard in the morning, she'll invite us in for fried bread. So sometimes we'd have a dozen kids in my yard for lunch. But she would have kept enough lumps of dough out for everybody. So everyone got some fried bread. And her bread was wonderful, and she made it for everyone. My uncle got some because he had a big family. We had some. Whichever teacher was unfortunate enough to have me that year got a loaf. Our pastor got a loaf. People who were sick, neighbors, got loaves. And sometimes people would actually lean across the fence, and while she was hanging laundry or doing something outside and the bread was rising, they would go, oh, what's that smell, Mrs. Chulop, you know, and then she'd smile, and they might get a loaf too. When I became older, I asked her one time if she could make me some whole wheat bread. But Grandma got very somber, and she looked at me, and she said, when I lived in the old country, and we were poor, we ate brown bread. And I live in America now, and I will never, ever eat brown bread again. And so she refused to make whole wheat bread for me. Mm. When I got a little bit older than that, I was probably in my mid-20s, I decided I was going to learn how to bake bread because my five cousins weren't. So I went to her house, and I was going to sit there and take notes because I'd been to college and I could do this. And I sat on the same stool I sat on when I was a child, and she got all her ingredients ready. Now, her ingredients never came out of bags or boxes. She would pour them in to crockery bowls. And then she had a huge wooden bowl for the mixing. And she never used a spoon. She used her hands. Mm. She'd rub them with olive oil first so nothing would stick. And then the eggs and the salt and the yeast and the flour, the sugar, everything came out with her hands. And so I started taking notes of handfuls of this and handfuls of that. And then she said, when it gets to be nice and it looks like dough, you put it in the oven for the first rise. 45 minutes, don't turn the oven on. Pilot light will do. And take it out and punch it down. And she went through the whole process with me, and I left that day with a loaf of bread. And a few days later, I decided it was my turn. But not being affluent, I went out and bought plastic bowls and a huge, enormous plastic bowl for the mixing. And I started. But it didn't look much like a ballet. It looked more like one of those dances that the young folks do now where they kind of dive into the audience.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it looked a lot like that. There was a whiteout in my kitchen. The dog was eating everything off the floor that I was spilling. My black German Shepherd was now a white German Shepherd. But I finally managed to get this huge plastic bowl filled with dough, and my hands looked like the creature from the Black Lagoon. Mm-hmm. I got the door of the oven open. I put it in and closed it, set the timer in 45 minutes. Went in the next room and started to practice guitar. And the first two-thirds of my career, I think I was practicing guitar constantly if I wasn't learning stories. I was always wanted to be a great guitarist and always turned out to be an average guitarist. And suddenly there was a knock at the door, and it was the woman I was dating at the time, and she came in and she sniffed the air, and she said, "What's that?" And I said, "Oh, I'm baking bread." And she went, "Oh, that is so sweet." And I thought, this is good. This is very good. And it was just about time to take it out. And I said, "Why don't you go into the kitchen? I'll meet you there. I'll just put my guitar down." And I did. And she preceded me to the kitchen. And I heard this scream coming from the kitchen. And I walked up behind her. And the oven door was open. And the entire oven was filled with dough that had come out. And it filled up half the floor. The dog was trapped in the corner whining. And it was this bubbling mass of dough everywhere. And I just stood there and I thought, oh my God, what have I done? And it took 2 hours to clean it up. We had four black plastic garbage bags on the back porch filled with dough that moved by themselves around the porch for the next 2 or 3 hours, you know, just bleep, bleep, moving around the porch, terrorizing the dog. And the oven never was the same after that. And my roommate came in and he came up the back steps and he ran into the kitchen. He said, "What is in those garbage can bags? They're moving on the back porch." And I told him the whole story. I said, "I don't know what happened." And he said, "Let me see the recipe." And he had been friends with my family since I was in high school. He looked at me. He said, "Dan, it says handfuls." I said, "That's right. That's the way Grandma does it. She doesn't use a measuring cup." He says, "Your grandma's 5 foot tall." He says, "You're 6'3" and you have hands like a gorilla."
Yeah.
So I had probably made the recipe at least 10 times bigger than it should have been, and that included the yeast. So the next time I went to Grandma's house, I made her pour her handfuls into a cup, and I measured it, and I still make her bread because I really think that with every loaf of her bread that I make and every story that she taught me that I tell, I ensure that she'll never die.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the true story of Grandma's bread.
Yeah, I'm glad you didn't give up.
No.
Yeah, this is the Afternoon Magazine, our guest this afternoon, storyteller Dan Ketting. Listeners, if you'd like to join us this afternoon with a question or a comment, or perhaps you've got a little story to share with us this afternoon to tell us about, give us a call, 333-333. 800-288-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. My grandmother made great bread as well.
Did she? Oh, that's wonderful.
And she said, well, all you do is essentially handfuls. Mm-hmm. You know, a handful of this. And she used some kind of canned milk, and it was the best bread in the world. And I never learned how to make it.
Mm.
Well, let that be a lesson to us all.
Yes. Grandma's bread was so almost yellow because she put so many eggs into it. And I always thought that was the cool part, you know.
Yeah, it was almost like cake.
It was,
It was so good. And toasted, it was so good. She'd send us home with loaves of it. And she lived in Chicago as well. And she'd take us to the beach, and she'd bring loaves of bread for the lifeguards.
For the lifeguards?
Yeah.
Oh, how wonderful.
And when we weren't visiting, apparently she had these young people who were her friends on the beach, on the shore of Lake Michigan.
How great.
She would take them bread, and they knew her, and just fabulous.
Well, I hope you've written some of these stories down.
I will.
Good. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. You could do a whole week of nothing but grandma and grandpa stories.
Sure.
Have people call in with their stories.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah. Sometimes we forget how important that older generation is. In traditional societies, most people learn their stories and their songs from their grandparents, not their parents, because their parents were so busy making a living, working on the farm, whatever trade they were at. But the grandparents had more leisure time. They were older, and they might be retired or whatever, and they had the time to spend with the children, and that's where you learned your stories and songs.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, you know, going back to the generation thing, her daughter didn't care for that bread, because it didn't come from the store. It wasn't sliced. And my aunt would say that, and I'd say, you're so wrong.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You're so wrong.
True.
Let's talk with a listener. Dan, you want to put your headset on, and we're going to talk with somebody on the toll-free line, line 4. Good afternoon. Where are you calling from?
Chicago.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. Telling stories remind me of one of our great storytellers, Studs Terkel, who was through the years on FMT in Chicago, told stories for hours on end, of course, way before the popularity of television and that took hold. And he continues to do so now at the age of 93, and reminding me a bit about your grandmother, where she fell down and broke her neck. He recently had an accident falling down the stairs and breaking his neck, but fortunately recovered, and just recently had a heart bypass and is continuing on at the age of 93. But I just thought I'd mention that he was one of our great treasures through the years when we enjoyed his program and telling great stories.
He still is. He's got a new book out.
That's right. He was interviewed on Charlie Rose Show the other day and still going strong. And it's such a treasure house of stories ad infinitum in every area, from classic opera to down to the dirt road and life experiences that we all have heard about. But I have a very short story to tell. I'm reminded of another storyteller who appeared on this program called Rubane Gold from Chicago. He was passed on some years ago. He was a sociologist working in the university and on, and trying to reach people through those academic means and make changes. But then he decided to become a storyteller and went on to do so. He told a very classic story about some farmers who were living side by side, raising some livestock and so forth. And from time to time, one of the livestock would wander off to the other person's property, and they had to cross a little stream. And other person would notice that one of the or more of the livestock were missing, and go to their friends and say, "Hey, have they wandered over to your territory?" And he said, "I don't know, I didn't count." So they went and counted, and then they divided up and brought the livestock back. But from time to time, one of them would be missing and wander off, and they couldn't find it. And he said, "Listen, that stream that divides us, it's not enough. It's not enough. We got to do something to divide the property up there so the livestock don't wander off." He said. So he called in a carpenter to do some work, perhaps build a fence and so forth. He said, "That stream there isn't enough. They might as well build a bridge there so that they could walk across. When I come back, you make sure." He had to go always says, make sure you do that and take care of that. So when he came back, to his amazement, he discovered the carpenter built a bridge. And he said, well, listen, all you got to do is put a gate on the bridge, and then they won't cross over the bridge, and we'll do something along the stream and divide it up so they can't go that way. But the point being that it had become very hostile because of the disappearance of some of the cattle, and the building of the bridge made them realize this is what they really had to do, get closer together, and even if the livestock intermingled, we all share the same planet, and we all share the same things, and why should we build fences and divide ourselves and build more bridges?
Oh, that's a wonderful story. It's a very good story.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Thanks for the call. Other calls are invited, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. This is the Afternoon Magazine storyteller and singer Dan Ketting, our guest this afternoon. He's the author of the book Stories of Hope and Spirit, Folktales from Eastern Europe. He's also recorded a number of CDs, including the Gypsy Wagon Tales from the Neighborhood. And as this is our fall fun drive, Dan has brought with him a stack of CDs. And so what we're doing this afternoon is for those folks who call in this afternoon to our pledge line, 217-244-9455, we'll enter you into a drawing. And we have 15 CDs, so we'll have five winners. Each winner will get a package of three CDs from our storyteller guest, Dan Ketting. A pledge is not required to be entered in the drawing, but we hope you'll consider making a financial contribution to WILL to support programs like The Afternoon Magazine, where you can listen to guests and talk to guests like Dan Ketting. WILL is listener-supported public radio, and your support is so critical. Please call us with a pledge of financial support. The basic membership, $40. The number to call, 217-244-9455. You mentioned your Noni's scary stories.
Mm-hmm.
Are scary stories something that you've come across in every culture?
Oh, yes. In fact, I think that scary stories, dark tales, horror tales, are one of the most common stories in every culture. They're there as cautionary tales. They're there as, again, in order to get someone. I think just about every culture believes that you can allow children to be less fearful if they're more familiar with things, you know. So you give them a familiarity with them. And some cultures are very graphic, and others not quite as graphic. Some of the most graphic stories I've ever read came from Native American in the far north, Inuit people, people like that way up north, very hostile environment. So the stories are very graphic in their ghost stories and their horror tales and violence.
So what happens in the scary stories of the northern world?
A lot has to do with darkness, ice, things like that. And because of that, because it's dark so long there, the darkness takes on this whole new meaning. And there's things waiting in the dark. And the darkness actually has a persona. It actually becomes a person.
Yeah.
And I think that really, if you look back in most cultures, you'll find that if you hunt, you'll find that these stories are there. They get sanitized as years go by. You know, like the King Arthur tales, when the monks and Mallory and people like that got hold of them and they changed them. You know, Lancelot's a minor character in the early traditions, and Gawain is really the great knight of King Arthur. But then Gawain was also the knight of considered the knight of the lady, the goddess. And so when they became Christianized, well, we could let him be the top knight. So Lancelot comes along.
Yeah. Well, recently, was it last week, I interviewed, and forgive me now for forgetting the gentleman's name, but he's put together this delightful little collection of nursery rhymes, and he's gone back and researched their origins. And the title of the book is Heavy Words Lightly Thrown.
Oh, nice title.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
But over time, children recite these rhymes, but at the time they were they almost acted like a storytelling graffiti, one person to the next in town, mm-hmm. because there weren't people didn't have the kind of resources that we have today, where books are so affordable and papers are everywhere. But they could tell one another the news. Mm-hmm. They could tell one another about the king or the queen. And in doing it, in taking the ideas and tossing them out gently, mm-hmm. or sort of gently, they could get away with it.
That's right, sure. Well, Robin Hood could do everything that the peasant people couldn't do against the king and the sheriff and the dukes and the lords and ladies. He could do it. He could rebel. They couldn't, but he could. And he could strip the bishop naked, dress him in rags and tie him backwards on a donkey and send him back to town. And he could defy the sheriff constantly and rail against the king. They couldn't. So a lot of the folk heroes, they were so important to the people because they could do all the things that the people couldn't mm-hmm. do. So they became their surrogate warriors in many ways.
Yeah, interesting.
Well, words.
Also, these little rhymes, they were a way of, I kind of think of them as little editorial snapshots, almost like cartoons. I mean, mm-hmm. you could lampoon people, and either they weren't around to hear it, or again, you could ridicule the king or the queen or the church, and get away with it.
Yeah, even to this day, if you think about it, if someone like a Tom Paxton writes a song about the president, what are the odds that the president would hear it?
Good question.
Yeah. If I were to write a song about the governor or a mayor or any political person, what are the odds? Pretty slim. So even to this day, folk music still has that anonymous atmosphere, because once it leaves my pen or whoever's pen and starts being done collectively by other people, it spreads out. And it's still rare that politicians would listen to the Midnight Special,
Yeah. Rich Warren's
That's right.
program here on AM 580 on the weekend. And that's also why it's so much of folk music has an edge. It mm-hmm. can be quite barbed.
Actually, even the traditional folk tales and the traditional ballads, the old ballads, I remember talking with Martin Carthy once, a great English ballad singer, one of the most influential guitarists in the 20th century. And Martin said, all my songs are political in a way, or I wouldn't sing them. They're all relevant, or I wouldn't sing them. And he's talking about issues of male dominance. He's talking about issues of corruption of officials. He's talking about kings and queens who are lording it over others. All his songs really are political. And if you took them out of the context of the 15th century and brought them into the 21st, they still have the same message.
Yeah. So there are characters and there are themes that we keep working over and over again.
I have several books at home. One, actually, Beauty and the Beast was edited by Betsy Hearn, who's a professor in the campus, and others. And they have 30, 35, 40 different versions of Beauty and the Beast or Cinderella or Knock on the Door or Tom Thumb, and all grew up independent of each other in all these different cultures. So these themes are universal.
Yeah. The stories that you've collected in Stories of Hope and Spirit, have these stories, have you heard, now this book's been out for a while, mm-hmm. so have you gotten some reaction from people who, these stories come from Eastern Europe.
Right.
The peoples of Eastern Europe. Have you heard from folks who come from this tradition?
Yes, yes.
And do they say, that one I know, but I know it this way?
Exactly. I actually had two young ladies in my audience in Indianapolis when I was doing a concert, and they were from Latvia. And I told a Latvian story during the concert, and they were just, they said they'd been in America for 2 or 3 years, hadn't heard anybody mention the country, let alone tell a story.
Where is that?
And they came up to me and said, we heard that when we were children. And then they said, but And then they made a little change. And I said, that's wonderful. And stone soup is basically, nail soup. And that's well known all over Europe. So you have these stories that are very, very well known. And they have a life of their own. Because of their theme. The one about the best wish is also found in the Jewish tradition. But the version I tell is an Eastern European. Who knows which tradition had it first, where it spread from?
Yeah. Well, folks like your great-grandfather were carrying stories around.
That's right, spreading them around.
Yeah.
Well, when I go to England, it's wonderful because the English storytellers are so giving. They always have a story for me, every one of them. We'll come up and say, oh, Dan, I got a story for you. I heard this story, and it's not my style, but it's your style. And Taffy Thomas, he's the one who always never misses. Every story Taffy's told me, I've sat there and went, God, I want to learn that. And, and this time he had the most beautiful little story. It's about a grandfather and a grandson walking down the road. And the grandfather has a peculiar look on his face, as if he's deep in thought. And the little boy says, Grandfather, what's the problem? And the old man looks down and says, Well, grandson, I have two wolves fighting inside me. The little boy says, Really? He says, Yes. What are they like? He said, Well, one is very mean, and he talks badly about people. He's vicious. And the other one is very kind and helpful. And wants to be everyone's friend. And the little boy says, Well, grandfather, who's going to win? The old man smiles and says, The one I feed the most.
Mm.
And Taffy just looked at me and said, That's your kind of story.
That's a great story. And that's a wonderful place to end, because end we must.
Well, thank you.
You've got to come back, maybe in the deep of winter.
Oh, I'd love to come
back.
And
we'll invite listeners to join us with stories of
wintertime.
Wintertime and past generations.
Oh, that'd be wonderful. I'd love to.
Okay. Dan, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
Dan Ketting, award-winning storyteller and singer. His book, Stories of Hope and Spirit, Folktales from Eastern Europe, is available from August House. You can also find it on his website, www.danketting.com. He's also come out with a number of CDs, including the Gypsy Wagon, Tales from the Neighborhood. And he's got another book coming out soon.
Yes.
So
in about
look
2 months.
That. Okay. Well, when that comes out, that'll be another good reason to have you back.
Great.
Very good. Dan Ketting has been our guest in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. Listeners, I hope you enjoyed this visit with Dan Ketting. I know I have. If you have, why not give us a call and say thanks in a way. Tom Rogers, our news director, is here with me in the studio. This is our fall fundraiser, and we're asking listeners to call in and do just that, support the programming here on WYLL.
Yes, indeed. And isn't this really what radio is all about?
Stories.
Stories, telling stories, telling, you know, using the ear to plant images in people and to get people talking and to get people relating to other stories. I think it all sort of, you know, it's a sort of breeds more stories and keeps on going and going and going. It's a great catalyst, and that's sort of what we think of public radio as being as well, a place where the discourse begins and continues, and you can join in as well on many of these programs that you hear on the Afternoon Magazine. We want to keep that tradition of radio going, and the way we do that is by coming to you, the listeners, and saying, "Help us out, continue our story." Give us a call, 217-244-9455. And Martha Deal and Pledge Central, we are keeping the storytelling tradition alive just for people who want to call up and pledge their support during this hour.
We certainly are, Tom, and I can tell that people have been listening because the phones are very quiet now. And as Tom and Celeste have both said, you help us tell a story, but you are also part of the story.
Exactly.
Public radio doesn't happen without you helping us to tell the story and therefore be a part of the story. And it's just a remarkable thing for us to be able to do that. Tom does that every day with the local news, and Celeste does it sometimes with people like Mr. Ketting, who is local, and sometimes with people halfway across the world. And we're glad to be able to do that, but the only way that we can do that is with your help. So get on the web and go to willpledge.org or pick up the phone and call 217-244-9455 and help us continue to tell the stories.
Yeah. It takes a short amount of your time and a major credit card. That's all it takes to begin your contribution to the story of WILL. Become a new friend if you haven't done it before. If your membership has lapsed for a year, come back and help us continue the fine programming that you hear. We rely on you more than ever, because we, as the national public radio people say, we're public by nature, but also public by choice. We are successful because we rely on your help, and that's where you come in. 217-244-9455 or at willpledge.org. Make that member card level pledge of $75 or more, and you'll also be able to become eligible for these CDs, which I would love to hear myself.
Yeah, sit down on a evening and put the storytelling CD desk into the machine and sit back and enjoy yourself.
The only thing missing is a cool or cold night. We don't have that yet.
Not yet.
It's coming.
Well, I don't think there's anything wrong with a sultry summer night and listening to a great story as well.
Well, that might be past, but how about a temperate night?
Well,
we'll take what we can get.
They stay fresh.
The CD is great in any season.
Good in any season. And we'll have five winners this afternoon. Call in and we'll enter you into the drawing to receive a package of three CDs from Dan Ketting, our storyteller here this afternoon, here on the Afternoon Magazine. The number to call, 217-244-9455, 244-WILL. Basic membership, $40. Thanks. You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. It's 1:53. Settlement prices in now from the Chicago Board of Trade. I think Todd Gleason is with us this afternoon.
Indeed, I am.
Okay.
After a trip down to the southern part of the state, actually the southwestern part of the state yesterday, bounced around on farm down there, kind of a unique farm in the state. I haven't been on one that had that many crops on it in a very long time. Very diversified. We'll hear more about that probably next week. Seven different crops, and all of them, with the exception of one, probably things that everybody's familiar with. They raised barley, which is the odd one. Of course, they were near St. Louis, and my thought was, frankly, that they were servicing Anheuser-Busch. That was not the case. But we'll check with them in about a week and a half. We'll hear more about that. December wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade. Wheat, one of the crops that they raise there as well. Down 7.5 cents today. Had a high of 335, a low at 328.5. A settlement price at 328.75. Pushed through a 50-day moving average and dropped 7.5 cents for the December wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade today. The March contract, 349, the high. Low at 342.75. Settlement price at 343.5, down 7.75. In the May futures, 356.5, the high, the low at 350. Settlement price at 350.5. They were down 7.5 cents. And July futures at 362.5, high, low at 356. Settlement price at 356.5, down 7.75. September futures, 365.5, the high, the low at 362. Settlement price at $3.63, down 7.5 cents. From the corn pit, December contract, 204, the high, the low at 201.75. Settlement price there at 202 for the nearby December corn. It was down 1.75 cents today. March futures, 216, the high, the low at 214.5. Settled at 214.75, down 1.75. And the May futures at 224.5, the high, the low at 222.25. Settlement price 222.5, down 2 cents. July futures 230.75, the high, the low at 229.25. Settlement price at 229.75, down 1.5 cents. And September corn 238, the high, low at 237.25. Settlement price 237.25. They were down 1.75. and December futures 247.75. The high, the low at 247. Settlement price for that new crop December, red December, settled 247, down a penny and a half for the day. December oats 164. The high, the low at 161. Settled at $1.61 and a quarter, down 4 and a half. In the March oats, a 171.75 high. Low at 168.5. Settlement price at 168.75, down 3.75 for the day. Soy complex now. Nearby November beans, 587.5. The high, the low at 582.25. Settlement price at $5.84.5. They were off 6.75. Probably some profit-taking after a move last week to the upside, and on the ideas that there was some weakness in the crude oil and some of the outside markets taking place in the bean pit and pushing prices lower there. 599 in the January on the high, the low at 594. Settlement price at 596.75, and they finished the day down 7. The March futures down 6.75 today, 607 the high, the low at 601.5. Settled at 604, they were down 6.75. May futures 610.5, the high, the low at 606. Settled at 608.75, down 6.25. And July futures 615.5, the high, the low at 611. Settled at $6.13.75, they were down 5.75. August soybeans 615, the high, the low at 612. Settlement price at $6.12, down 8.5 cents. December bean meal 173.70, the high, the low at 170.90. Settled 171 even. They were off $4.20. January meal down 4.20 as well, 175 even. The high, the low at 172.80. Settled on that low at $172.80. They were down 4.20. December bean oil now 24.48. The high, the low at 24.11. Settled at 24.39, they were off 3, and the January contract was unchanged today at 24.70 with a high of 24.72 and a low at 24.35. Now here's Celeste with the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange.
Some recovery today on the Mercantile Exchange. October feeder cattle 117.35, the high 116.62.5, the low. The settlement 117.27.5, that down 20. November 115.90, the high 114.55, the low. The settlement 115.60, up 42.5. January 113.25, the high 112.05, the low. The settlement 113.12.5, that up 67.5. October live cattle 89.05, the high 88.52.5, the low. The settlement 88.97.5, up 62.5. December live cattle 90.10, the high, the low 89.30. The settlement 89.95, that up $1. December lean hog 60.90, the high 59.85, the low 60.35. The settlement, that up 2.5. February 63.65, the high 62.72.5, the low. The settlement 63.22.5, that down 20. April 64.20, the high 63.45, the low 64.15. The settlement, that up 45. May lean hog 64.40, the high 63.55, the low. The settlement 64.32.5, that up 45. February